In less than 4 weeks, we have the Passover, and then we have the Days of Unleavened Bread. And during this time, we recognize that it's a time that's set apart for God to, for us to renew our commitment to God and to acknowledge the sacrifice of Jesus Christ as our Redeemer. We've got this next month to prepare both physically and spiritually. Well, today, as part of our preparation for Passover, I want to go over the biblical account of the fig tree, or in particular, to review why Jesus Christ is recorded in the Gospels to have cursed a fig tree, and to show how that often misunderstood example is important in our lives today. Fig tree and its fruit, the fig, are mentioned several times in the New Testament and in the Old Testament as well, but it's more than just a common Mediterranean fruit tree. The common fig is also a symbol or a type that's subject to various interpretation. If we take a look in Genesis 3, we start off there, an early mention of the fig tree in Genesis 3. We'll read about Adam and Eve, and this often shows up in cartoons and such. But if we read starting in Genesis 3, of course, this is the period of time when Adam and Eve were in the garden, and God said that not to eat of a particular tree, but they could eat of the other tree. And so in Genesis 3, even verse 1, "Now the serpent was more subtle than any beast of the field which the Lord God made, and said to the woman, 'Yes, you shall not eat of every tree of the garden.' And the woman said to the serpent, 'We may eat of the fruit of the tree of the garden, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God has said, you shall not eat of it, neither shall you touch it, lest you die.' And the serpent said to the woman, 'You shall not surely die, for God knows that in the day you eat thereof, then your eyes will be open, and you shall be as gods, knowing good and evil.' And when the woman saw the tree was good for food, and that it was pleasant to the eyes, and a tree to be desired to make one wise, she took the fruit thereof and did eat, and gave to her husband, gave also to her husband with her, and he did eat. And the eyes of both of them were opened, and they knew that they were naked, and they sewed fig leaves together and made themselves an aprons. Well, I'm not going through everything with regard to Adam and Eve in this case, but I thought it was interesting, and we often don't pay a lot of attention, but why was it fig leaves? It could have been, you know, could have been banana leaves, could have been a series of oak leaves, could have been anything, but it was a fig leaf. And this we'll see as it makes a difference as we go through other examples in the Bible, because you see they were found themselves naked. Sin was exposed, and they were now trying to cover themselves up. So this fig leaves that they sewed together were their early clothing. They just simply didn't have an awareness. They were created of God. Everything was natural and normal, and now they felt the need to hide. And so the fig leaves were what they put together to do that. There's another example of the fig, and that's in Matthew 24. Let's go to take a look at Matthew 24, starting in verse 32. In Matthew 24, verse 32, "Now learn a parable of the fig tree. When his branch is yet tender and puts forth leaves, you know that summer is nigh. So likewise you, when you still see all these things, that it is very near, even at the door. This generation, verily I say to you, this generation shall not pass till all things be fulfilled. Heaven and earth shall pass away, but my word shall not pass away. But of that day and hour no man knows, not the angels of heaven, but my Father only." Well, the parable of the fig tree, when his branch is tender and puts forth leaves, you know, summer's. In other words, it's something's happening here. Why the fig tree? I mean, it could have been any tree. It could have been. There's an old saying when I grew up on the farm from pioneer days that you plant corn when the oak leaf is the size of a squirrel's ear. Now, that's what the old fellow that I bought a farm from 40 years ago told me. He said, that's how you know when to plant, because that was all related to soil temperature and how, whether it was an early spring, late spring, and he had it down. And he watched the weather very carefully and was sure to tell me that. So there are certain things in nature, but it could have been anything, could have been, but it wasn't. It wasn't an oak leaf. It wasn't a palm leaf. It wasn't something else. It was a fig leaf. When the fig leaf shows, you know the time is near. We have another parable, and that's in Luke 13. We'll take a look in Luke 13. In Luke 13, and starting in verse 6, and he, meaning Christ, also spoke this parable. A man had a fig tree planted in his vineyard, and he went to look for fruit on it, but he didn't find any. So he said to the man who took care of the vineyard, "For 3 years now I've been coming to look for fruit on this fig tree, and I haven't found any. Cut it down. Why should it use up the soil?" It was taking up space. And verse 8, "Sir," the man replied, "leave it alone for one more year, and I'll dig around it and fertilize it, and if it bears fruit next year, fine. If not, then cut it down." Now, it could have been anything, but in this case, it was a fig tree. Wonder why it was a fig tree. Because, you see, what did the servant say when the owner of the garden said to cut it down? It was unproductive. And the servant or the man in charge of the vineyard said, I'll fertilize it. You know, I'll do my best here. I'll dig around it. We'll put manure around it, and we'll see if we can bring it into production. And if not, then it can go away. Well, there is yet another time, and that we can read in Mark 11. And this is what I'm going to go through somewhat today, is when Christ came to enter Jerusalem, a triumphant entry, just on the Passover week, just prior to Passover. It's often called Palm Sunday, and in Mark 11, this particular time was the week prior to him being crucified. And he was well received. Of course, we know why Christ was well received at that time. His ministry had been going on for 3.5 years. He was noted for performing many miracles, many healings, remarkable things that were memorable. And people knew that, and they flocked to be close to him because people would flow and draw to him. I know when we look at the Feast of Tabernacles, I think it's, what is it? What is it, Isaiah 62, or it's either 2 or 62, whatever your memory will come up with it probably better than mine. But when God's kingdom comes, all nations will flow to it. It's going to come. It's going to flow to it. So we had this type right here where when Christ came into Jerusalem, people would flow to him. But this is the general setting. So let's take a look in Mark 11. We'll start in verse 11. In Mark 11 and verse 11. If I can find it, here we go. Jesus entered Jerusalem and went to the temple. He looked around at everything, but since it was already late, he went out to Bethany with the 12, meaning his 12 disciples. So he went out overnight. The next day they were leaving Bethany. Jesus was hungry, seeing in the distance a fig tree in leaf. He went to find out if it had any fruit. When he reached it, he found nothing but leaves because it was not the season for figs. Then he said to the tree, "May no one ever eat fruit from you again." And his disciples heard him say it. On reaching Jerusalem, Jesus entered the temple and began driving out those. And then we go on, and it talks about how he cleansed the temple and so forth. And we often refer to that during the week of unleavened bread, of the cleansing of the temple. And then we jump to verse 19. And when evening was come, he went out of the city. Verse 20, and in the morning as they passed by, they saw the fig tree dried up from the roots. And Peter, one of the disciples, called to remembrance and said to him, "Master, behold, the fig tree which you cursed is withered away." And Jesus answered and said to them, "Have faith in God. For verily I say to you that whosoever shall say unto this mountain, 'Be moved,' and it will be cast into the sea, and you shall not doubt in his heart, but shall believe in those things which he said shall come to pass, he shall have whatever he says." Many people are somewhat disturbed by this incident, and several questions were raised. Well, what's the meaning besides this Christ coming across this fig tree? There were leaves, but there was no fruit. And then it sounded like he cursed. Did Christ really have a right to curse a fig tree? And what is the meaning of curse anyway there? And since the tree was apparently destroyed, did Christ then destroy somebody else's property that didn't belong to him? I mean, what kind of a deal is that? So the conclusion that some people draw regarding the incident is misdirected. there's a lack of understanding as to what was involved in this episode near the end of Christ's ministry. Bertrand Russell, a British philosopher, wrote an essay in 1927, Why I Am Not a Christian. Well, clearly, he was not a Christian, and he was explaining why not. So he writes about this story of the fig tree. Quote, and then there is this curious story of the fig tree, which always rather puzzled me. You remember what happened about the fig tree? Quote, he was hungry, and seeing a fig tree afar off having leaves, he came, if haply, he might find anything thereon, and when he came to it, he found nothing but leaves, for the time of figs was not yet. And Jesus answered and said to it, No man eats fig, fruit of you, of thee, hereafter forever. And Peter, later in the chapter, Peter says to him, Master, behold, the fig tree which you cursed is withered away. Going on with the essay, this is a very curious story, because it was not the right time of year for figs, and you really couldn't blame the tree. I cannot myself feel that either in the matter of wisdom or in the matter of virtue, Christ stands quite as high as some other people known to history. I think I should put Buddha and Socrates above him in those respects. Ooh, but he's at least substantiating why he doesn't believe it. It just didn't seem right to him. Well, that means perhaps we should read a little bit more, understand a little bit more about the fig tree. And if you take a look at the International Standard Bible Encyclopedia, it has some interesting things to say about the fig tree. Fig trees are cultivated all over the Holy Land, they're referring to the Middle East, especially in the mountain regions. Wild figs are usually rather shrubs and trees, occur also everywhere. They're all usually barren and often described as male trees. It's generally supposed their presence is beneficial to the cultivated variety, in other words, hopefully for pollination. The immature flowers harbor small insects which convey pollen to the female flowers and by their irritating presence stimulate the growth of the fruit. So insects, such as a wasp, will feed on the pollen of one and then go to the other and pollinate them. And there may be a reference to it in Amos 8:14. So I looked it up, and Amos was a gatherer of sycamore fruit, which could have been another term for figs. Fig trees are usually a medium height, 10 to 15 feet, for full-grown trees, and sometimes they can reach as high as 25 feet. The summer foliage is thick and surpasses olive trees in its size and in its cool and dense shade. In the summer, the owners of the trees may be sitting in their shadow. Such references are probably to this custom rather than to, and not uncommon as having a fig tree overhanging a dwelling. The oldest known fig tree that I could find or looked up is a planted fig tree on the island of Sri Lanka, which is an island off of the coast of India. Oldest known particular fig tree, and I think that one was near 1,000 years old. Very old tree. It's a fig tree. The fruit of the fig tree is peculiar. and there are many varieties of figs, differing in sweetness and color and consistency. And some will taste good and some bad and so forth. When you have a case of the time of the fig trees, you will have an early putting forth of the leaves. The tiny figs develop along with leaves up to a certain point, about the size of a small cherry, and then the great majority of them, these are the early figs, fall to the ground and are carried away with every gust of wind. These are unripe figs. These are early figs. This is before the regular time of the figs. And translated appropriately in the King James Version is untimely figs. In other words, they put forth a little bit of fruit at first, but that's not the big crop. But these can also be eaten, depending, of course, on the type of fig that it is. The fruit, and this may come about in April, but the best varieties of fig trees produce a certain proportion of the early crop of figs which remain on the tree. But the fruit reaches its ripe perfection about June. So the early ones, some of them that don't blow to the ground, can go on, but it's the later figs that develop more carefully. If we take a look at then the cursing of the barren fig tree, we read, reading on, when the young leaves are newly appearing in April, every fig tree which is going to bear fruit at all will have some immature figs on it. In other words, if it's going to bear fruit, there's going to be figs. If there's no figs in April, there isn't going to be any coming later in June. So the time of figs then would be for the ordinary edible crop was, it was a bit early for that, and the late crop wasn't time yet. It wasn't time for that. So, but so it's evidence, sure evidence that the tree is not barren. So if the tree doesn't, you know, if you go there and you find that that particular fig or that tree does not have figs, you know that there won't be any figs coming on that tree. If there weren't any earlier, there won't be any later. And so when Peter says then and uses the term cursed, or at least in the King James Version, it's used only once in the two New Testament records of this incident, the word cursed. And on the second day, when Jesus Christ was coming back past the tree, and it was noticed that the fig tree was completely dead, this compelled Peter then, who was speaking on behalf of the others, commented, "Rabbi, look, the fig tree which you cursed has withered." Well, first of all, the term that we use in the King James, curse, is not the same, not the biblical parlance that we would use in modern sense of profanity. It's according to Strong's, it's word 2672. And it's really a pronouncement of doom. It's just noting a fact that the tree is doomed. And so anytime it would be said, it would be just understanding that that particular tree or whatever that it was directed to, well, that one's doomed. Just as we read earlier in that other parable that if it doesn't produce fruit, the owner of the vineyard will say, let's clear the land. Well, you know, why does it take up space? We'll put something else there. And so Christ's comment was, well, that one's doomed, okay? And bear in mind, this is a time when there's there are very few leaves anyway, okay? It's just starting to bring forth leaves. So, and it was Peter who referred to the tree as cursed or doomed. And then we have this charge that Christ destroyed that which was not his. First of all, there's no mention in the Bible that the tree had a particular owner. Matthew, when we read that observation, and when he noted it was growing by the wayside, we read that in Matthew 21, verse 19. It could have been a volunteer tree, such as are known almost anywhere. I know on the farm I was raised on, there was a fence line that was established back in pioneer days. My great-grandfather was a homesteader and put in a fence line, split the oak posts, put the oak posts are still there. That was from the 1880s, and those oak posts are still in place. The wire is a bit rusted, though. I don't think you're going to find that anymore. They weren't using zinc-coated wire then. So, but the old posts are still there, and all along the fence line, there would be brush or trees growing. And to this day, there's a mulberry tree that grows right along that fence line. That just happens to be there. And I'm sure it happens everywhere where there's wherever there's a fence line or by the wayside, something is growing. And if we go back to Leviticus, we can read that anything that grows of its own in such places is left for the traveler, the stranger, the widow, or those who could not otherwise grow their own. And so it was certainly available. It was by the way. It was on the way. So that's certainly a possible expectation. Then there was a fellow in 1863 named W.M. Thompson, who's a scholar, who was familiar with the local customs in that area, pointed out, now this is in his book, The Land and the Book, and published in 1863. He said it was common for travelers to pick fruit from roadside trees or any tree that was not enclosed because there was no enclosure, no censure associated with such. In other words, it was available. If it was along the way and the vineyard owner or orchard owner didn't close it off, if you were passing by, it was available. And then to point out that it must be emphasized that Jesus Christ, as the Son of God, and the creator of the earth possesses the nature of a deity. And accordingly, and we can read that in John 1:1 and other places. And as a deity, the earth and its fullness are his. We read that in Psalm 24:1. They belong to him. And so Jesus Christ, then, as we read in John 1, verses 1 through 3, was the creator of the earth and everything in it. Well, he already owns anything. How can you steal from yourself? Okay, so Christ had every right, with the opportunity to pluck the fig from the tree had it been there. Jesus Christ has the sovereign right to use the elements of creation to accomplish the higher goals which man in his limited knowledge may not understand at any given moment. And that includes the destruction of a tree or even to cast a herd of swine into water. So no man has a right to say of him, what are you doing? Then we can note that Jesus, when we read this account, as we did in Mark 11, that Jesus, when he first saw the tree, he saw it while he was yet afar off, and he could only know or discern that it had leaves in it. Well, the fruit is in a fig tree does not grow out in front of the leaf. You must move the leaf to one side, and underneath it are the growing of the figs. So from a distance, you couldn't tell if it had fruit or not. And this brings to mind, and I didn't write it down in my notes, but it brings to mind the parable of the wheat and the tares. You can't tell at first. They look the same. And in fact, they look so much alike that you can't tell until it comes time for the harvest. One will produce, one is productive and the other one is not. The wheat is productive and the tares were not. And so now we have a similar situation that you could not tell from afar off. You had to be really up close in order to determine whether that tree was producing fruit. And so Jesus Christ would have had to have come close to the tree to see whether or not it was producing fruit. There was Alfred Edersheim wrote The Life and Times of Jesus the Messiah, a 1947 book. And he writes, in Palestine, the fruit appears before the leaves. Well, that's interesting. So the leaves don't come first. The fruit comes first. And thus, to see a leafed fig tree, even at an unseasonable time, warrants the assumption that there would be fruit on the tree. But this tree was an oddity. The leaves were there, but it was fruitless. Well, because the leaves come, and then they cover up the fruit. So now you can't tell, because the leaves are there, but you can't see if the tree is going to be productive. So what are the lessons that we can understand from this particular story of the fig tree? And if we take a look back in Mark 11, what is the lesson in verse 22 that Jesus Christ said? It was a lesson in faith. So the first lesson he gives us, it's a lesson in faith. Verse 22, Jesus answered, said to them, have faith in God. And then he goes on in verse 23, whoever shall say unto this mountain, that be you removed, that you also be cast, and then you be cast into the sea, and not doubt in his heart. In other words, you can cast a mountain into a sea, but shall believe on those things which shall come to pass. So that's one lesson of faith, that Jesus Christ is expecting us to have faith in what he has foretold for us. The second lesson we read in verse 24 of Mark 11:24 is a lesson in the power of prayer. In verse 24, therefore I say to you, whatsoever things you desire when you pray, believe that you shall receive them and shall have them. Well, that's a pretty strong lesson, that if we're comporting ourselves with God's will in other ways, and then if it's that desire is within God's plan, and we pray, then we shall receive them. The third lesson we read is in verse 25, in Mark 11, verse 25. And when you stand praying, forgive if you have anything against any, that your Father, which is also which is in heaven, forgive your trespasses. That's a pretty important lesson as we come up here towards Passover and unleavened bread, is the lesson in forgiveness. So we have a lesson in faith, a lesson in prayer, and a lesson in forgiveness. But we're not done there. And then, and I want to turn to John 15. In John 15, starting in verse 1. I'm going to read in the NIV. I am the true vine, and my Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit, he trims clean so that it will bear even more fruit. You are already clean because of the word I have spoken to you. Remain in me, and I will remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. I am the vine. You are the branches. If a man remains in me, and I in him, he will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. If anyone does not remain in me, he is like a branch that is thrown away and withers. Such branches are picked up, thrown into the fire, and burned. If you remain in me, and my words remain in you, ask whatever you wish, and it will be given you. This is to my Father's glory, that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples. And as the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Now remain in my love. If you obey my commands, you will remain in my love, just as I have obeyed my Father's commands and remain in his love. That's a pretty important lesson, that if we want to remain with the love of the Father, that we must comport ourselves accordingly to the obeying the commands of God and showing that we have that love. And this is these words, if we jump down now to verse 14. You are my friends if you do what I command. I no longer call you servants, because a servant does not know his master's business. Instead, I've called you friends, for everything I learned from my Father I've made known to you. You did not choose me, but I choose you to go and bear fruit, fruit that will last. Then the Father will give you whatever you ask in my name. This is my command, that you love each other. That's pretty profound, as we're coming up now to the time of Passover, the week of unleavened bread, that this is a critical lesson, that when Jesus Christ, when he sees us from afar off, or anyone sees us from afar off, and they see the leaves, will there be fruit under those leaves? And that's so when we look at that, that same lesson is what we read about when Christ came, when he came across the barren fig tree, when we read the parable earlier. And what did the master of the vineyard say? No, don't cut it down yet. Isn't kind of that what our prayer would be before God? Don't cut us down yet. You know, let's dig around here and we'll get fertilized. We're going to do better tomorrow. Really, really, we will. We'll all do better tomorrow, right? We'll do what we can so that this next season we can produce fruit. Or the example when Christ sees the leaves and he comes and he lifts up the leaves as the example back in Genesis. What were they hiding? Of course, they were hiding their nakedness. So we talk about the fig leaf. In fact, that's a term in law that's used. And I was observing a court case one time, and the attorney argued that the other guy's case was merely a fig leaf covering up the truth. Whoa! And the judge seemed to understand it. Apparently he had read enough of Genesis to know that the fig leaf was covering up things. Well, the fig leaf also in the parable, as well as in the Christ example, is covering up. What are we covering up as we approach the time of Passover and the time of unleavened bread? Are our fig leaves covering up whether we're barren and not producing fruit, or is it covering up those the untimely figs that are not yet fully developed, of course, and as we come along with that? So as we take a look at this remarkable example, we understand that the fig tree should have borne some fruit if it's going to be before the leaves. And just as the keeper of the vineyard wants to cast aside, or should cast aside, the unproductive vines and branches. So we must bear spiritual fruit, and or we could be cleansed as well. That's referred to in John 15 and verse 6. So if Christ did not spare a barren fruit tree, well then, what would he want to spare those who are unfruitful, that are taking up space? So we should do more than just show our leaves to the world. We should show the fruit to the world. Of course, we know Galatians 5:22, what kind of fruit that we have, and I'm not going through all of the fruit today, but we can go through the Galatians 5:22. But we must bear fruit, and we must have faith in God and show that faith, to demonstrate the faith by keeping God's commandments. And then God says that he will hear our prayers. He will give us the desires of our heart, knowing that we can't simply show up and appear from a distance to be a Christian, because to do so would be to have fig leaves that really didn't have the fruit underneath. So it is our opportunity now, as we understand the value of the fig tree and the example of the in Genesis, where we had the fig leaves that were covering up the sin that Adam and Eve had, or we understood the parable of the fig tree that we about let's dung it and dig it a little bit more so we can produce more later, and then the example of Christ and his immediate disappointment to lift up the leaf and find that there weren't any figs there for a quick meal, that we must learn from these examples that we simply can't just show up and appear to have leaves, but we should do more than just show our leaves. So let Jesus Christ find fruit in our lives, and let us understand the example of the fig to help us to bear more spiritual fruit.